If making it easy to be an illegal alien isn't enough, how about offering a reward for being an illegal immigrant? No sane country would do that.
Good morning and welcome in to this Monday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there, Mark Congleton here with you for this first edition of 2020. This daily exploration, the insight, observation, and yes, a bit of absurdity. How you doing? Did you have a good Christmas and New Year? Great holidays? I hope you did. Things were good around our place. Hopefully they were good around your place as well. And now you are rested, recharged, and ready to go, unless you've been out in the shopping madness. You know, I thought the shopping madness, I don't know what I was thinking. I've just made it a point. It's been a point for me, personally, not to be involved in all that shopping insanity. Ever since I've been able to, you know, ever since I've been able to shop online and not be in the crush, so to speak. And I've told you a couple of stories about Christmas shopping and how insane that was. And then I'm thinking afterwards, okay, well, the Christmas crush is over. It's after Christmas, right? No, I got out back in it again, and everybody was out there spending their gift cards. I didn't think about that, but that's the way it was. I got out there in the mess again. Hey, how are you? You all right? You doing good? I hope you are. I hope that 2020 finds you well, you and yours, and that the holidays were good to you, and that you're ready to dial back up again and face a new year. And what a new year we have. We've had a strike on Iran. We've had, threats. We've had Democrats making threats. Like, maybe I should clarify that. We've had threats from both Iran and the Democrats. You know who your enemies are. It's a weird year already. Let's see. How did we start things off? Just a quick recap of things around our place in our lives. And when I say our, I'm talking about myself and my wife, Jane, sweetest woman in the world, and what we did during the holiday season. We went to see Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. We loved it. Haters are out there. They're posting all kinds of stuff. I was scanning YouTube early this morning and saw all of the armchair quarterbacking going on about this movie and the two prior. And over the weekend, my wife and I sat down and watched a handful of these things. And she looked at me with an eyebrow raised and said, "You realize that these are people who dress up as characters to go see movies, right?" And no offense to you, if you like to go to Comic Cons and you like to cosplay and the like, that's fine. But what we try to deal with on this podcast is honesty and reality. And in the spirit of honesty and reality, if you want to be taken seriously, don't step up in front of a microphone or in front of a camera and speak into a microphone dressed as Jar Jar Binks. Just don't do it, okay? Nobody's going to take you seriously. I know I won't. I won't. at any rate, we enjoyed the movie. We had a good time. We thought it was it's a movie. I have to say that. It's a movie, people. Come on. It's not real life. It's not American history. It's not something that is of any real consequence. It's entertainment. And if anything, the blowback from the haters shows that the principle of bread and circuses is still in play. And if you don't understand what that is, just look up bread and circuses. Because under the Roman Empire, before it fell, the government kept the people fed and drunk and entertained. They gave them lots of wine. They made sure they had bread, they had wine, and they could go to the circuses, which was the competitions, which was, you know, ritual. It was assassinations in the arenas and things like that. They kept them entertained, bread and circuses. And as a result, they didn't have much to say about the government making a mess of everything in their society. Well, that's going on right now. And as a result, we have a society that is addicted to entertainment. They must be entertained. You remember that line, Russell Crowe from Gladiator? Are you not entertained? That's what that was all about. And we have the same thing happening actually around the world in our society today. Entertainment is extremely important. Otherwise, why would people be tweeting and retweeting Ricky Gervais' opening statements at the Golden Globes last night, where he prefaced it all by saying, "All right, we're gonna have a lot of jokes, so no hurt feelings, okay?" In essence, he said that, and then he ripped into Hollywood. At one point, saying, "Some of you people have spent less time in school than Greta Thunberg." So, and he said they had no business commenting on life in America today because they don't. They're ignorant. They're idiots. And he's saying that, actually, if you've been paying attention to him on social media, you know he's said that on social media in all seriousness. But then he prefaces it at the Golden Globes by saying, hey, we're telling some jokes here, so don't get offended. And then he dives in and rips everybody to shreds. So you know the man meant what he said. He just prefaced it so that liberals would say, well, it's called entertainment. It's called comedy. That's just what it's sarcasm. That's what that was. No, it wasn't. But that's our society today. We must be entertained. And as a result, we have a generation of people who will dress up as Boba Fett and go to movies and then condemn everything they've seen because it doesn't measure up to their standards. If you really want to be entertained for a little while, entertained and disgusted, just search through YouTube and look at all of the commentary and reviews on the last three Star Wars movies. And what you'll see is pale people in their basements talking to cameras about what they thought about certain things and how they think Kathleen Kennedy should be fired from Lucasfilm and all of this. That's what you see. You see all of these people who would probably be surprised at what life would be for them if they actually ventured out into the sunlight. They're talking about this deep and weighty matter of Star Wars movies. Oh, please, give me a break. Anyway, that's one rant. I'm out of that. So we saw that movie. We had a good time with it. We enjoyed it. The haters are deeply distracted by unimportant things. That's what it amounts to. Christmas was great. Enjoyed some wonderful time with family. It was the Christmas of the phone. This year, we've been rocking the iPhone 6S for, well, how long has it been now? There's been the 6S. There's been the 7, the 7S, the 8, the 8S. There was no 9. Then there was a 10 and the 10S. And now, 8 generations later, we've bought new phones. So this was the Christmas of the iPhone. So we've both, Jane and I both have iPhone 11s. I got the Max, she got the Standard, and not the Max. I got the Pro, she got the Standard. And I got to tell you, they're great phones. Absolutely amazing telephones. And the improvement on the camera, the improvement in the speed, the improvement in the screen, everything being readable and more easily viewed, and they're fast. They're just terrific telephones. Terrific telephones. I'm blown away by the Pro's camera. I took some pictures when we still had the Christmas tree up. We were, it was early in the morning before we've even turned on the TV. We're both sitting there sipping coffee, and I picked my phone up, and the only light in the room in that end of the house was the Christmas tree. And I thought, I wonder what this phone will do, what the camera will do with just the lights of the Christmas tree. You would have thought it was daytime. The detail is sharp and crisp. The everything is lit beautifully. It all looks fantastic. The camera on the iPhone 11, the Pro, is just amazing. Absolutely amazing. And the zoom feature, the fact that you can shoot video and zoom in and out, and you can zoom way in with the zoom on the Pro. And you've got this wide angle that's just amazing. If you go places and you find yourself trying to get everything in the picture, because when you're standing at some place and you're looking at the scenery and it's just amazing, and you take pictures and you show them to people later, you say, well, this, you can't see everything. So I took this, I did this panoramic picture with my phone. And so you get this weird, bizarre, twisted, misshapen image, this oddball looking image that doesn't look natural. Or you take three or four images side by side by side by side. You say, well, this was this over here, and this is this over here. And with now you can actually zoom way, way out, and you can almost get yourself in the shot behind the phone. It's just amazing. It's just amazing. Anyway, very impressed. Very impressed. New Year's, we had some more great family time, way too much great food. The diet begins now. I got to tell you, I got these new jeans on, and I'm having trouble breathing. Thank you for all the food. Great food. We had a terrific time, and I hope you did as well. Oh, speaking of food, did you hear about this guy who bought a McDonald's burger 20 years ago, and he still got it? Did you see that story? Yeah, a McDonald's burger purchased in 1999. It looks like it could have been cooked yesterday. According to its owners, the decades-old meat only faintly smells of cardboard. I doubt they're willing to taste it, though. David Whipple bought the burger originally at a McDonald's in Logan, Utah in July of 99. He originally purchased the burger to use in a demonstration about enzymes and deterioration. He explained to KUTV, he said, it got stuck in a coat pocket. The coat got thrown in the back of my van. I guess it just got hung up in our closet in Logan. Subsequently, we moved from Logan to St. George, Utah. It stayed there for a couple of years, and I think my wife was going to give the coat away or something, and she found it. The burger originally went viral back in 2013 when it was first revealed to the world. After that, however, it was put back in a tin where it was stored until recently. And KUTV recently caught up with Mr. Whipple. Wasn't that the guy with Charmin? Anyway, he decided to open that tin back up and check on the burger. And aside from the pickle, he was just gone by this point. The burger and the bun still look relatively the same. The major difference, Mr. Whipple says, is that the burger now has a faint cardboard smell. On January 2nd, McDonald's introduced its inaugural vegan meal across the pond with the launch of veggie dippers. The breaded bites will be filled with red pepper, sun-dried tomato, pesto, split peas, rice. It's going to sell for about $4.30. Hungry customers can make their meal complete with fries, which, by the way, are reportedly vegan-friendly in the UK, while youngsters can enjoy the veggie dippers and their Happy Meal, too. Yeah, I'm sure they will. They'll enjoy those. Mom, what happened to my chicken nuggets? That's going to happen. Thanks, McDonald's. You've ruined French fries on another level. It used to be that if you asked anyone who has the best French fries in the fast food business, it was McDonald's. Nope. They succumbed to popular opinion, or actually not popular opinion. That's wrong. If they had succumbed to popular opinion, they never would have changed their fries. They succumbed to pop science is what they did. And the pressure from a tiny group of vocal people. And they changed the way they cook their fries. And now they're not the same. And now they have fries that are vegan friendly. How many vegans do you think there actually are in the world population? Let's be honest. How many vegans, in the UK specifically, how many vegans do you think there actually are? That's going to be a tough one. Not many. But doggone it, we're going to cater to the vegans. You know what they say, you don't have to ask a vegan if they're vegan, they'll tell you. I think that's true. But the 20-year-old McDonald's burger, it still looks new, smells a little like cardboard. I got a feeling if you took a bite of it, you'd be visiting the ER, or more probably the bathroom soon afterwards. I was just trying to remember when the last time was I actually ate a McDonald's burger that I purchased myself. No offense to McDonald's. I'd love to have your advertising dollars if you'd like to advertise in my little podcast, but got to be honest with you. As long as there's a Five Guys anywhere around, as long as there's practically any barbecue joint that actually cooks a decent hamburger, McDonald's is not going to be very high on my list. I think I actually stopped buying McDonald's almost 40 years ago when we used to pass by a McDonald's and listen to our son scream about going to McDonald's because he wanted a Happy Meal. Yeah. I was so ticked off about them making my son scream for their crap. I refuse to buy McDonald's ever again. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Good to have you on board today. This first podcast of the year 2020. Wow. And we start the year off, and I've got to be honest with you, pretty much the entirety of the rest of this podcast is going to be about what's happening with Iran, and the reaction to it. Did you see where George Lopez, the comic, has responded to Iran? You know, Iran has said they'll pay $80 million for somebody to knock Trump off. He said, hey, I'll do it for half. $40 million. Give me $40 million. We'll get it done. I realize he's a comic, and I realize he's just saying something for shock value, but that's an area that you don't tread on lightly, talking about the assassination of a president. It's not wise, but then again, when has anything the left has ever done been wise? It's beyond absurd. It's just crazy. And it makes me wonder, are we going to see some sort of response? Is the Secret Service going to be looking into him? Is the FBI going to be knocking on his door? It makes me wonder. When you make a threat like that, you do have to wonder. So, Soleimani, this general, wiped out in a rocket attack, in a drone attack, in some sort of an attack, an airstrike. And, of course, the left is all up in arms. They're going insane. They're accusing the president of distracting from his impeachment, and they're doing all kinds of things. They're everything, just to be honest with you and to help clarify the situation, if you hear something coming from the mouth of a Democrat, whether they be in office or campaigning for office with regard to this, it's a lie. Some of it, they may couch it in truth, and they may sound reasonable, like Tulsi Gabbard, you know, somebody that like that. But the bottom line is the basis for what they say is insanity and lies. It really is. And you have to remember a few things. Okay. Iran sabotaged 6 oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz. Our president downplayed it. Iran shot down a U.S. drone. President Trump downplayed it. Iran attacked Saudi oil fields. Trump did nothing. Iran attacked the U.S. embassy. And President Trump responds. And all of the haters are screaming, jumping up and down, and demanding to know why Trump wants a war. If he wanted a war, let's be honest, don't you think something would have happened long before now? Because there's been ample opportunity, ample reason, long before now. Let's remind ourselves about what this guy, this general, was, shall we? Coming from the Jerusalem Post, Julian Reichelt, the editor-in-chief of the best-selling German newspaper Bild, on Friday, authored a barn-burning commentary praising President Donald Trump for authorizing a military strike to eliminate Iranian General Qasem Soleimani. Reichelt wrote, in part, President Trump has freed the world of a monster whose aim in life was an atomic cloud over Tel Aviv. Trump has acted in self-defense, the self-defense of the U.S. and all peace-loving people. He added that the Iranian terror godfather Qasem Soleimani stood for a world that no peace-loving person can want, a world in which you can be torn apart by a bomb at any time because you are in the wrong place at the wrong time. The commentary singled out Soleimani's scorched earth campaign in the Syrian war. Quote, a world in which entire cities are wiped out like Aleppo, in which bloodthirsty militia go from door to door and execute civilians, end quote. Reichelt noted the potential of Iran's regime to carry out terrorism in Germany and Israel, saying in which the kindergartens in Germany could burn up in fireballs and at any time because its children are Jewish. Wow. In which Israel is under threat of extinction every day. The title of Reichelt's commentary was, Trump has freed the world from a monster. The U.S. Pentagon said it took preventative military action against Soleimani because he planned attacks against American diplomats. According to the U.S. State Department, Soleimani oversaw terrorist operations that were responsible for the deaths of at least 603 service members in Iraq. The U.S. Ambassador to Germany, Richard Grenell, wrote on Twitter, quote, as a diplomat, I believe there isn't enough media attention on the fact that General Soleimani was planning to attack U.S. diplomats. Donald Trump caught Soleimani in the act and saved lives by stopping him. Reichelt wrote, Soleimani, the world's most repelling and bloodthirsty terrorist who brought suffering and harm over humanity on the mullah's behalf, was an enemy of our civilization. He represented the unbearable thought that murderers will live more safely and be more untouchable the more people they kill with the support of the state. The editor-in-chief declared that his violent and overdue end will not stop global terrorism, but the image of his burnt-out car still sends out a powerful message. U.S. President Donald Trump has made it clear that the worst figures in the world, however big-mouthed and ruthless they may be, cannot hide from America's strength. And those are the words of the editor of Bild, the German newspaper. The world around us, the honest people in the world around us, not the members of the UN, those corrupt criminals, but the honest people of the world are celebrating. They're celebrating. There's story after story in the news over the weekend, over the past few days, about people in Iraq celebrating, about people in Iran celebrating. What you see in the mainstream press, however, is pictures of Soleimani's funeral with thousands of people thronging the streets. Of course that's going to happen when you live in a virtual dictatorship where you know that if you don't respond to the call, someone's going to show up at your house and you and your children will no longer breathe. Of course they're going to show up for a funeral and they're going to shed mock tears. Of course you are. Otherwise, the mullahs will have you disappeared. And lest we forget, as long as we're being honest about things, after President, let's delve into this article. It's an article from Daily Wire by Joseph Curl. It says, after President Donald Trump ordered the U.S. military strike to take out Iran's secretive Quds Force commander Qasem Soleimani, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the Democrat lunatic from California and Speaker of the House, said the president should have asked for permission from Congress before conducting the airstrike. In a statement Thursday night, she said, the administration has conducted tonight's strikes in Iraq, targeting high-level Iranian military officials and killing Iranian Quds Force commander Qasem Soleimani without an authorization for use of military force against Iran. Further, this action was taken without the consultation of the Congress. She also said the full Congress must be immediately briefed on this serious situation and on the next steps under consideration by the administration, including the significant escalation of the deployment of additional troops to the region. But let's remember something. Before Trump took office, his predecessor, the beloved Barack Hussein Obama, launched more than 2,800 attacks on Iraq and Syria without a single congressional approval. The Washington Times reported in April of 2015, the U.S. military has been conducting strikes in Iraq for 10 months and began striking directly at targets in Syria last September as part of Mr. Obama's announced campaign to degrade the capabilities of the Islamic State. There were 10 times more airstrikes in the covert war on terror during President Barack Obama's presidency than under George W. Bush. Did you hear the Democrats complaining? No, you didn't. And I ask you this. If you were President Trump, having seen what the Democrats are really about and what they will do to you given the chance, would you have told them what you're doing? Considering that their entire focus lately has been on lynching him, do you think he really should have given them anything more to lynch him with?
They looked at me as if I had lobsters crawling out of my ears.
Kind of my life in a nutshell. Hey, getting back to what we were talking about before the break, the airstrike on Soleimani. I left off telling you that the U.S. military had been conducting strikes in Iraq for 10 months and striking directly against targets in Syria as part of Obama's announced campaign to degrade the capabilities of the Islamic State. Now, that was in 2015. And he had actually done more than George W. Bush had done. And Nancy Pelosi, in a statement in the last day or so, said that the president has to have authorization for the use of military force, the AUMF, before he can do anything. Well, a week before September 11, 2001, those attacks that killed more than 3,000 people, Congress passed the authorization for use of military force that lets the president pursue and take out those responsible for the attacks plus any associated forces. This is a week after September 11th. So there is authorization in place. In 2014, the New York Times reported that Obama had authority under the AUMF. In a piece headlined, Obama sees Iraq resolution as a legal basis for airstrikes, the Times said the White House believes that Congress's 2002 authorization of the Iraq war, and not just the 2001 authorization to fight al-Qaeda, provides a legal justification for President Obama's air campaign against the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. That's what the Obama administration said then. So, Nancy Pelosi is conveniently forgetting the fact that the president has legal authority to do exactly what he did. And they're trying to convince you otherwise. Now, I said something earlier about the people campaigning, and that is the Democrats who are campaigning currently. That if you hear them commenting on this, and actually anybody in office, you're not hearing the truth. They're not going to be honest with you because it doesn't play to their need, which is more political support. Well, Democratic presidential candidate Senator Elizabeth Warren, during a CNN interview yesterday, refused to commit to killing top terrorists if elected as president, and later promoted a debunked conspiracy theory about why President Donald Trump authorized the strike that killed Iranian terrorist Qasem Soleimani. Warren, who made the remarks on CNN's State of the Union with host Jake Tapper, also falsely claimed that Trump's action in killing Soleimani represented an assassination. Tapper said, "So you called the U.S. attack that killed Qasem Soleimani a, quote, assassination. President Ford issued an executive order in 76 to make political assassinations illegal. Are you saying that this strike was a violation of law?" Warren responded, "Look, it was a targeted attack on a government official, a high-ranking military official for the government of Iran, and what it's done has moved this country closer to war. We're not safer today than we were before Donald Trump acted." Columnist, attorney, and Iraq war veteran David French debunked this false claim last week in a tweet, saying, "I'm seeing a lot of people calling the strike on Soleimani an assassination. Some are even bringing up Reagan's Executive Order 12333 prohibiting assassinations. Killing an enemy commander in a war zone with a military strike conducted under the law of war is not an assassination." Tapper continued by noting that Soleimani was a terrorist and had been considered a terrorist by the United States for decades. He asked, "As president, would you not prioritize the U.S. military killing the leaders of organizations designated terrorist organizations?" Elizabeth Warren refused to answer. She then proceeded to push a debunked conspiracy theory about why Trump decided to strike Soleimani, falsely suggesting that it was because he was trying to distract from impeachment, saying, "I think the question that we ought to focus on is, why now? Why not a month ago? Why not a month from now?" And the answer from the administration seems to be they can't keep their story straight on this. They have pointed in all different directions. So what happens right now? Next week, the President of the United States could be facing an impeachment trial in the Senate. We know he's deeply upset about that. And I think people are reasonably asking, why this moment? Why does he pick now to take this highly inflammatory, highly dangerous action that moves us closer to war? Well, there's plenty of evidence that debunks Warren's claims about Trump authorizing the attack because he wanted to distract from impeachment. The first piece of evidence is that Soleimani was behind an attack last month that killed an American contractor in Iraq and was behind the recent terror attack on the U.S. Embassy in Iraq. Those two attacks alone provided Trump with all the justification he needed to launch the strike. The second piece of evidence stems from the first piece of evidence. The New York Times reported that Trump initially rejected the strike on Soleimani's this option on December 28th in response to the American contractor being killed. It was only after the attack on the U.S. Embassy that he authorized the attack. The third piece of evidence is that Trump has tweeted about impeachment multiple times since the attack, which is not something that he would be doing if he was trying to distract from impeachment. So, Elizabeth Warren, true to form, is on national television, albeit CNN, and we know their numbers are way, way down. She's on a Sunday morning Talking Heads program, and the viewership for those is way, way down. Because honestly, people are fed up. They understand the slant. They understand the twist. They understand the spin, and they're sick of it. So they don't watch the shows anymore. Very few people do. And those people say, "Well, if you don't watch these shows, you're not informed." Oh, we're informed. Trust me, we're informed. We're just not misinformed. So she goes on this show, and she makes statements which are patently false. And she's not challenged. She won't be challenged in the mainstream press. She won't be challenged by anyone on the left. Because without lies, the left has nothing to say. And that's what it all boils down to. Without lies, these people have nothing to say. Well, there's been talk of retaliation And of course, your leftist friends are going to talk about how Trump has put us into a terrible position because now they're going to retaliate and deaths will start rolling in and blood will be spilled. What they don't tell you is that that's already been happening. Blood has been spilled. And when blood was spilled on U.S. property at an embassy, remember, embassies are considered our soil. When they attacked us on our soil, the president responded. But much more has happened that was not at an embassy or on our soil. We listed a few of those things a few moments ago. They're saying, oh, now there's going to be retaliation. Well, a provincial Iranian commander has identified more than 30 targets within striking distance of the Islamic Republic, echoing hints at harsh revenge against Americans. Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps General Golamali Abu Hamza. Wow. I'd like to buy a vowel. He made the remarks at a ceremony in Tehran Friday evening. The military commander first hinted that a major oil transportation route falls within Iran's range, making it a prime target for revenge over the killing of Qasem Soleimani, saying the Strait of Hormuz is a vital thoroughfare for the West, and a large number of American destroyers and warships cross the Strait of Hormuz, the Sea of Oman, and the Persian Gulf. International trade isn't the only thing the thuggish Iran is willing to strike at. Seemingly even more central to their plans of vengeance are the numerous U.S. positions in the region surrounding them. He later continued, 35 vital American positions in the region are within the reach of the Islamic Republic. And Tel Aviv, the U.S.'s heart and life, is also in our reach. So they're making threats, even of reaching out and striking Israel, which, of course, they would prefer to do because we know of their hatred for Israel. But our president has not sat back and let them get away with it. And we'll talk about what he had to say about that coming up after the break. Please, don't let the liberal press, the progressive media, frighten you about this. We're not going to war. They're not going to harm us. It's all spin.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Okay. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host. Coming back from the holiday break. I've missed being in the studio every day. I've been in the studio doing other things, just not podcasting every day. But good to be back. Thanks for joining me for this crazy ride along as we work our way along the highways and byways of life in the world today and the insanity that is politics. See, where was I? Oh, Elizabeth Warren. See, I found something. Oh, yeah, she called this guy a high-ranking government official, a military leader. Well, he was a terrorist and acknowledged as such, recognized as a terrorist. And so why should we give him any more honor than that? And we need to remember that Iran has been behind the vast majority of terrorism in the world today. They've been enabling people, equipping people, training people. And they come back at us after this strike and say, they've got, what is it? What do they say? What was the number? 35 vital U.S. targets that they could strike. 35 vital U.S. targets, including Tel Aviv. Well, Trump responds. He said, President Trump responded on Saturday to Iranian threats against Americans in retaliation for the death of terrorist Qasem Soleimani, who was killed in a targeted strike at the Baghdad airport Friday, saying, "Iran is talking very boldly about targeting certain USA assets as revenge for our ridding the world of their terrorist leader, who had just killed an American and badly wounded many others, not to mention all of the people he had killed over his lifetime, including recently hundreds of Iranian protesters." We forget about that. That this guy was behind the murder of hundreds of protesters in Iran. "He was already attacking our embassy and preparing for additional hits in other locations. Iran has been nothing but problems for many years. Let this serve as a warning that if Iran strikes any Americans or American assets, we have targeted 52 Iranian sites representing the 52 American hostages taken by Iran many years ago, some at a very high level and important to Iran and the Iranian culture. And those targets and Iran itself will be hit very fast and very hard. The USA wants no more threats." He was referencing the Iranian hostage crisis of 1979, when Iranian militants seized 66 American hostages at the American embassy in Tehran and held 52 of them for more than a year. Remember, this happened during Jimmy Carter's presidency. It happened after the Islamic Revolution in Iran that curtailed freedom for Iranian women who had previously enjoyed a normal existence and sent relations between our countries plummeting. We've basically been at war with them on some level ever since, whether through proxy wars with their militias in Iraq and Afghanistan or dodging their terror attempts and attacks over many years. The hostage crisis was further inflamed by then-President Jimmy Carter's inept and weak foreign policy. As soon as Ronald Reagan took office, literally minutes after inauguration, Iran released the hostages. It appears that President Trump has not forgotten about what Americans have suffered at the hands of the Islamic zealots in Iran. He was not specific about where the 52 locations are, so at this point we can only speculate. But one would imagine they will be economic hits, such as oil fields, military bases and assets, possibly religious sites. If the U.S. did target cultural and religious sites in Iran, the screeching from the press and the Democrats would be almost unbearable. By the way, that's already started. Just because he mentioned them, they're already freaking out about targeting cultural sites. If it worked to quell the constant escalation of insanity from that part of the world, it might be worth it. Terrorists don't seem to mind blowing up anyone else's cultural and religious sites. At some point, they should lose theirs. And, of course, the left is freaking out at that possibility. Former Obama advisor Colin Kyle tweeted, "For what it's worth, I find it hard to believe the Pentagon would provide Trump targeting options that include Iranian cultural sites. Trump may not care about the laws of war, but DOD planners and lawyers do, and targeting cultural sites is a war crime." It's interesting how one side can commit all the war crimes they want while the rest of us has to abide by the rules the enemy doesn't follow. Speaking of that, has anyone figured out why Notre Dame burned down yet? You hear the same crickets I do. While Islamic terror groups blaze their way through Catholic churches and behead Catholic wedding parties and aid workers, priests on the altar, blow up little children in Sunday school, and target Buddhist temples and sacred sites without consequence, the talking heads in Washington ivory towers are nattering about preserving cultural sites. What has that gotten us so far? Until now, no one in position to do anything about it has been serious about stopping Islamic supremacy, much of which originates in Iran. Perhaps we finally have a president who's serious about stopping the spread of terror. Nobody wants another war, but the truth is we've been at war with Iran since 1979. It's just coming to some sort of conclusion. The question is, which way will it go? Some people think we're all going to die in a ball of fire. For example, blogger Andy Ostroy expressed his concern at Trump's tweets, "Killing us all." This is what he said. "Stop. You need to stop vomiting out this random drivel on Twitter like some hyper-cretin, tiny-fingered maniac and start acting like someone with an ounce of effing sanity before you get us all killed." And see, that is
the liberal left. They're frightened. They're scared to death. You're going to get us all killed. No. Now, this is just more classic Trump bravado with which he has demonstrated he can and will act in a circumspect way. But the unpredictable nature of his actions keep the enemy off balance, and that's helpful. Mike Cernovich weighed in saying, remember when Trump said he has a big red button to nuke North Korea? Can we please stop pretending as if Trump doesn't often bluster as part of a negotiation tactic? If history's taught us anything about Trump's tweets, we probably don't have to worry too much that the military will start striking Iranian mosques anytime soon. But he has you wondering, and Iran wondering, if he'll do it, doesn't he? Of course he has the left wondering, and of course the left is using it as political fodder. They're saying, see, see, he's crazy. We need to get him out of office. And then they conveniently forget the 2,800 military strikes which occurred under the Obama presidency. 2,800. And not one of them did anyone ask for permission. Not one of them went to Congress. Not one time. 2,800. This terrorist is behind a strike on a U.S. embassy that resulted in the death of one of our people. And our president said, this is what happens when you do that. Learn from this example. And the left says, he's a warmonger. He's got the big red button. You should all be frightened, scared to death. Nothing could be further from the truth. In just the same way Trump rattles Democrats and leftists in America with his Twitter account, he's using his Twitter account to essentially stick his tongue out at the Iranians right now. Go ahead. Here, watch this. I'm going to scratch a line in the dirt. Cross it and see what happens. And he does that after he demonstrates what can happen. We've just spent trillions of dollars on our military. Trillions. We've gotten them back into fighting form again after being weakened by the fundamental transformation of the United States of America, which was going on for 8 years. And he said, look out. If you cross that line, this will happen to you too. And I've crossed a line, meaning it's time to go. We'll see you back tomorrow morning for the next edition of The Daily Perspective. God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.